What's up and welcome to the Match Mad Podcast. This podcast follows my life and interest in the experience of others. We take on a range of topics as broad as life itself and talk in depth with people who live those experiences so that you can be informed and entertained. So, relax, sit down, Match Mad.
What's going on, y'all? It's Match Mad. I'm your homie. I'm your plug. You know I got extra love. And I'm here with the incomparable, the outstanding, the multi gif or gif possessing, depending on how you decide to pronounce that word. With great reactions come great responsibility. And Dan Green has great responsibility and great reactions. Everybody, Dan Green. So yeah, welcome, man. So I've been down to talk to you, man, just to sit down and just dig and pick apart your thought processes on things and how the world around you has been moving and how you kind of just been reacting to that shit, man. So before we get into that, I wanted to ask you just, you know, some quick questions to break things down so people get a better understanding of who you are. So we'll say, what are five things that most people know about you or should know about you, and five things that people don't know about you that you want them to know?
Gotcha. So five things people do know about me. I'll start there. So
they do know or should, yes.
Or should know. So I think first and foremost, I'm a father. So that will always be an important identity for me. Of Claire, my daughter, she is two now. So that's really important that I want people to know. I'm almost a husband, I'm a fiance. So that's also very important to me with Jen and caring for Claire and building our relationship. That's really important to me. I feel like most people probably know I went to Michigan. That's probably clear. The football team sucks, but you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm on wax saying that. We're gonna end that right there. What else? People should know. I'm a social worker, so you know, I work in higher education, student affairs, but I always will identify as a social worker. I think a lot of people think of social work as CPS or being in a school or a hospital. And, you know, I guess I do work at a school, but it's higher education and working at Michigan. So, yeah, I'm a social worker. One more. Born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. Being a Detroiter is something that's really important to me. And, yeah, you know, always going to rep for the city. And then you
100%.
Said, yes, sir. And you said five things that people don't know.
They don't know and that they should know.
They should know. Okay. So
if they don't, like, if you don't know now, you know, nigga, like,
right,
that
right.
Type of,
I'll say that I'm, you know, around the people I know, I'm probably one of the best 2K players out here. I'm going to put that out there. You know, if you want to challenge me, you can do that. But, you know, my homies can let you know. But, you know, I'm going to put that out there. If you don't know, now you know. What else?
How can they find that challenge, though? If you know, what's the idea? So,
I'm on the current gen still. I guess it's past gen now, shit. But I got a Xbox One X. You can, which is like, I get confused because it's what the new one is, the Xbox Series X, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Whatever, yeah. So I got the old one. So, but yeah, it's Greez Flair. So Greeze Flair, like Ric Flair. So you can find me on there, you know, challenge me. Good luck.
You dropped the gauntlet on niggas on the
right.
Podcast.
Hey man,
I need a flex bomb.
Right.
I definitely need a flex bomb right now.
What else? What don't people know? Well, I think one thing I think that fuels who I am is I'm a pastor's kid. So growing up in the church and everything, I think that fueled like my care for people. I wouldn't say I'm the most like religious person to this day, but how my parents communicated things to me, and we work within the Salvation Army, and you know, there's critiques of the Salvation Army and what they've done. Some things that I don't agree with, but I think overall the message of you come as you are in spaces, whoever you are, and get that help. That's how my parents formed their congregation. So I think for me, how I engage is like, you know, whoever needs help, you know, I'm open to be that. Probably part of why I'm a social worker. So that's two things. What else? Man, I don't even, am I that interested? What don't people know? I don't feel like I'm.
Like, do you have like a weird like tick or something?
Weird,
do you
got like tick.
Okay. A birthmark on like your foot that looks like Africa.
Okay,
like...
you opened it up for me. You opened it up. So I'm double jointing in my fingers, which is really weird. So
which
like.
Ones?
So my index fingers and my ring finger. So you can't see what I'm doing right now, but I can like bend. So you know, like that first fold under the nail, you know how like, you know, you got that wrinkle right there, the first wrinkle closer to. So I can like have that pointed straight up like at a 90 degree angle, if that makes sense. So like,
oh word, that does make sense, because I'm trying to do it with
and you
my
can't shit. Do it can you
I can't do that shit.
Yeah, so I can do like my index finger and my ring finger like that. Well, no, not my middle finger, actually, not my ring finger. Yeah, I don't know my fingers and shit. So yeah, also with that, I can also like crack my can you hear that?
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, that's my fingers cracking. So I'm double jointing my hands to an extent.
That's me. You hear that?
Yeah.
That's me too.
Right. So, you know, so that's some weird shit. This is not about me, but I would say about like my dad, he played for like, I know it's going to sound like it ain't real, but it is. I can give you proof. But it was this travel company called like the Harlem Showboats. They were like bootleg Harlem Globetrotters. But my dad was like really good at basketball. So I grew up around basketball. I love basketball. I wouldn't say I'm great at basketball, but, you know, I had some glory days back at pickup in high school, you know. But, yeah, I would say, you know, I'm a sleeper in the corner. You know, Bruce Bowen defense. I might be a little dirty on that side, but I compare my game to Bruce Bowen. So, yeah, shoot a three and bother you on defense. So, what else? I count the finger shit as two, so that's four. One more.
Yep.
Man, what's another one?
It's hard to figure it out.
Yeah,
sometimes.
It is. You know, it is.
We don't think about those things.
I don't. You know. I'm thinking a few things. I'm like, what do I want to tell y'all? You know. I'll go with. So. I remember, like, so when I was in college, you know, I lived in the dorms all 4 years. But, you know, my fifth year, finally lived in a house. So, I've only paid rent like 2 years in my life. I've been an adult for 10, and I still live in. So rent is a foreign thing to me. And that's probably why I don't want to get another job. So, whoever hiring, I need the bag because I don't pay rent. So
big bag.
So that's what I want. Listeners to know, if you are hiring, let me know. But also, please have the bag. Yeah,
drop it expeditiously,
please.
I've been waiting for like the bag to drop on me, like JT's nipples dropped out on Instagram Live.
Oh man!
Like, if the bag could drop on me like that, listen,
Lord have mercy.
Because I was open to receive it,
man.
She deserved that,
man. She knew what she was doing. That bra don't fit no way. She know what's going on.
No way.
It's the titties
that
for her.
That bra was sagging like pants.
Man.
It is the titties for her.
Yes.
Like, them bags were sagging like Jabot jeans.
Man.
Like, I'm just sitting here like, them don't look like they your size, baby.
Right. I'm not complaining.
Yeah, oh, never. Oh, never. Yeah. And
just an observation.
Is there a GIF out there? If anybody has a GIF of it out there, I'd appreciate it. Just like in the words of, you know, there's a heart in the house tonight. Like, that's how I feel about if I see that titty one more time.
Oh, you know, I find everything. So, you know.
You do really do. You do actually find everything. I've seen you like, I was like, where the hell did he get this so fast? Or yeah. Where's some of the stuff I haven't seen since like Tumblr? I was like,
yeah,
you like just go through like an ancient Tumblr thread.
So so this is the thing. So like when it comes to people, always says like, how do you have all these gifts or these videos? And for me, I know they say that photographic memory is not real or not a thing. But I have pretty close to it because it just come to me. I just know where it is. I'm like, I remember, I will literally remember somebody posted a video a week ago and I'd be like, let me go in their media and find that shit because that shit was funny and it works perfectly for this context. And I will grab it and post it. And that's like random as hell. Like, who remembers that? But that's just, you know. That's how my brain works.
Makes sense.
You know.
I do the same thing with memes. Like, I do
exactly,
the same thing with
right.
Like, I mean,
you know,
like,
I feel like that's not foreign, right?
No, but, not at all.
I mean, yes, I do download videos. I do have, like, over 500 gifetized videos and shit, you know. But,
your YouTube history probably random as shit.
Oh yeah, I definitely be on the screen record to now. I've learned how to crop the videos and all that and edit it so you don't have the, you know how you swipe up, that shit annoying. You gotta just crop that, you know, you just crop it out real quick, you know.
Easy it's really,
you know,
damn
even
easy.
If you screen record
on Twitter,
if you screen record off Twitter, you know, take off the little retweet button on the bottom, you know. It's easy. But, you know, that's tangential. But, yeah.
That's just amazing because I usually go through, like, radio. I use, like, Jeff Keyboard or something like that, and I, like, use my source through there to find, like, extra GIFs. Or I'll still go through Tumblr. And
oh,
just,
yeah.
Just, like, find the most random gifs of all time. Like, some of the most gold I've ever had that I can't find anymore is like deep
oh, yeah.
in the bowels.
Right. And they scrubbed Tumblr, so it's hard to find shit that was on there back in the day.
Yeah, between the porn and the Russian bots, like, you never knew. It's like, bro. I'm like, damn, are you selling like videos of your vagina,
yeah.
or are you selling like borscht across,
you know,
the sea?
Bro, but Tumblr was like ahead of the game. It was like people was doing like OnlyFans type stuff back in like 2011 on Tumblr. It's crazy.
Yes. Oh, actually, a former guest on the podcast, she started out doing all her stuff on Tumblr. And like, I knew her, like when I met her in college, I knew her from Tumblr. Like,
that's crazy.
I was like, wait, no, I know. I said, I know that head.
That's sick.
Shout out to my dog Arnold. She a real nigga. She doing great out here.
Beautiful.
I was fucking standing. But man, it was actually a few other things. We got a lot of shit occur. Like, we had like a 4-day lag before we got like a full like presidential announcement,
bro.
Like niggas are still like calling their lawyers and saying he cheated. Like he still said that he was cheated last election.
Peep though, he's so broke because he got Rudy Giuliani actually heading out the election lawsuits. You're desperate because Rudy Giuliani is no more than a prop at this point. He's a name, and you actually got him leading shit. Okay.
Nobody is taking Rudy Giuliani seriously since he put the mob away.
They was out. Man, that's all. Like, since then, it's like, all right, bro.
They give him a Netflix series just so we can remember like that he put the mob away. Like, oh, he bro. Did that and put away a whole bunch
and
of
then people. And it's like, I'm not about to get into 9/11, but he was mayor during then.
I'm ready.
He got gas during that time. He just happened to be there. I'm just not even trying to be funny. Like, I'm not saying, no mention, like, I'm not, about 9/11, it happened in tragedy, but he just happened to be there, and then I feel like he's just riding off of that shit, plus the FBI shit. Now he the mayor, not the mayor, the lawyer of the president. And which is like...
Catastrophe breeds circumstance.
Man. Yeah, that this is
like, you know, like,
that's real. Yeah,
it breeds fucking circumstance, you know, like just how like the end of World War One put Hitler in the best position.
Yep, he like
to
all
fucking do what he did.
Let me get in here.
Like you have to catch people at the right time and stoke them flames at the right moment. If you just sit around and watch long enough, like it's a quote that Customato would always say when he was telling Mike Tyson about like training to become champion. He's like, you know, Mike, you gotta, we gonna be sitting here. We like, you know, they like lions and tigers or whatever, but they running and chasing and hunting. But we crocodiles. Like we'll sit in a swamp for days and hours. But when it come our way, we gonna catch it in the teeth and we never gonna let it go. Like, I'm like, that's exactly how it works.
Yep.
Like, once you get that moment, like it's boom. Like it's nothing else. Because in the moment you eat, like in most moments in your life, you either rise to it or you fall at the end of the day. Like it just depends on how you handle it. Like COVID is a moment and it was handled terribly and it's still being handled terribly.
It's not being handled.
I'm surprised it's not been a lockdown. I'm so surprised it's not a lockdown. I was waiting when she was talking on the press conference to do a lockdown.
It was a long update, but this is the thing. So going back, you said the I want to get the quote right. Tragedy breeds circumstance, right?
Catastrophe breeds circumstance.
Or catastrophe, right. So you made me think about for white people, Barack Obama being president for 8 years was a catastrophe. Now, I'm not speaking to his politics. I get. He was a president. There's problems with him. You know, I'm not speaking to him as a president, but he was a black man who was president. White people like, what the fuck? And Donald Trump was like, these white people been pissed. The Tea Party been pissed. Everybody been pissed. Let me stoke these flames and get in here. And he's been riding it ever since. Now, you know, the mail-in voting, like we talked about, he's trying to sue everybody. He's an idiot, right, at the end of the day. But he was smart to be able to stoke them flames, man. But the pandemic, like you said, like it's a moment, and it revealed how idiotic him and his administration is. Because he could finesse and finagle and just, you know, lie, essentially. But you have hard numbers of people getting sick, people dying, you know. And I had COVID, so you know, it's the sickest I've ever been in my life. And I don't get sick usually. I don't think I've even had the flu. But
when did you have COVID?
That was back in really when we first started shutting down. So back in March, it was the first week of March was spring break here at my job at Michigan. The next week, that Monday, I got so many emails about COVID-19. I was like, wow, like, okay, this month's about to be a thing. I heard about coronavirus in the news, but you know, it seemed like this was some foreign thing. They talked about it like Ebola or something. And all right. But then that week, it kind of just ramped up a lot. And by that Wednesday, we're like, all right, we're going remote. And by the next week, they're like, all right, everybody go home. And it was like, what? And now you see we have all this social distancing and wear face coverings and the masks and testing's available. And like, you know, things have expanded, probably not as much as it should or as quickly, but they have expanded since March. But I was still working at that point. And like buildings are full, and we didn't have direction on wearing face covering. So who knows who I got it from? But you know, I'm working on campus with students who go in and everywhere. So who knows how I got it? Probably working. Yeah, so I was sick as hell late March, early April. And you know, my case was mild if you compare it, but. You know, I couldn't eat. I lost like 15 pounds. It was terrible. You know, and I, it was like, yeah, I had stomach issues and I wasn't eating. So I'm like, this is weird. But yeah.
How did the medical professionals react? Like when you had COVID, like what was the reaction? Because I've never seen a medical
professional react
outside of television.
Well, during that time, it was like, don't come to campus. I mean, don't come to the hospital if you're not dying. Like,
right.
Because we can't handle it. Like, we don't have the capacity. So, like, if you are maintaining and whatnot, you know, it says to stay home. I had to quarantine in my home, you know, isolate myself. They prescribed me, like, some medicine to suppress a cough. But other than that, it was just monitoring your symptoms. And it was at that point, it was like, all right, wait it out. There's no cure. Hope you don't die. It was, so I don't know how it's changed now. Seems like they might have more practice and be able to treat it probably. But early in the game, it was like, oh, we don't know what the fuck to do. Stay, if you're not deathly ill, stay at the crib.
And that's terrifying, like to get at such a young age.
Just oh yeah, it was
receive that kind of news.
It was definitely like, because I think at that point, like, what my job, it's already tiring, and then feeling like, you know, you're just working, then you get sick, and so many other things going on in my job and personally and everything, and then it's like, oh, I got COVID. And I gotta be in this room for 72 to 96 hours. Like, it was tough on the mental, for sure. And like seeing people dying. So you're like, man, hope I don't wake up and like can't breathe. Thankfully, like, you know, I'm been fine. I haven't had any lingering effects. But during the time, it's like, oh my gosh, this is nerve wracking.
Yeah, I can definitely understand it because it brings you closer to grips to your mortality
oh, yeah.
than you're ready to kind of undertake at the time. Like, especially because you talked about how important it is for you to be in the lives of Jen and Claire. And,
definitely.
You know, you're developing and, you know, creating this life and family. So I can understand that being just a moment of just like, just a heart, you know, a heart stopping moment
yeah.
for you because nobody, it's different when it's a disease and people can like talk you through and be like, you know, we have treatments for this and X, Y, and Z, but when it's like an unknown, no, unknown, man, like, you know, like,
we don't know what the fuck's going on with you. And this is all, and it seemed at that point, it was like every couple of days there was a new symptom. So. You know, yeah, I'm like, I don't know if I got the flu, a cold, I got diarrhea, I got strep throat. Who knows? But yeah, shout out to testing being available. I will say my job made testing very available to employees very early on. That was great. But yeah, it sucked.
And how was recovering from that? Like, was it eating? Was it difficult to get back to eating over time?
For me personally, it wasn't too bad recovery wise. I would say like it took me a while to like. When I say a while, maybe like a couple weeks to get my breathing back right. So you know, it the joint is a little rough. That might have been a little rough for a little while. So I had to chill on it, actually. I was like, I need to relax. But yeah, probably a couple. Right. You're right. Tom Thibodeau out here.
One more time.
Man. But yeah, so like my recovery actually was not too bad, actually. I know a lot of people have talked about like different lingering effects they have, but you know, I've been fine. Thank God. But you know, we'll see 10 years down the line, they're like, oh, did you have COVID back then? Oh shit. But yeah, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
You're going to get a mesothelioma commercial and you're going to be entitled to compensation.
Exactly. So, let me call Sam.
You kill me immediately. Don't call
man. What's the other dude? The weird dude is Mike Morris. He been weird. Don't call him either. I heard he been on a weird tip.
Yeah. It's a lot of weird folks out here, like especially when they be here for like generations. Oh, yeah. Like or just like I don't even
Right, bro. That's a whole other layer.
We gonna let the weird be the weird. And there's one thing I really wanted to talk to you about is I know you were very like vocal when you had your group chat. I mean, do you still do the group chat with black men about holding each other accountable and sharing information?
Yeah, yeah, we still communicate within that space. Yeah,
it's crazy because it feels like so long ago in terms of like it was such a like big moment for us in like a local and like regional right. setting. And then, like, so much has, like, happened in, like, between then on, like, a national and, like, statewide level. Like, the governor was, like, damn.
Oh, my God. Man, like, it's been so much. You know, like, 2020 has been, like,
so
a
much
year of reckoning in many different ways for many different groups and many different people. So
2020 was really a big, so, like, you know, people are like, oh, 2020, it's, you know, it's 2020, you know, these numbers, man, da, 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 da. It's going right. to be a good year, a new decade, 1, 2, 3. Like, it felt like going to Benihana's and while they were, like, flipping the knives, one of them, like, dropped and, like, stabbed you in the hand.
Final,
like,
some final decimation. Like,
yes, some literal, some final, like, the onion fucking volcano exploded and it took your eye out. like, it's some shit like that. Like, we were really excited for what the... We were excited for like, okay, we will have an election, you know. I don't know why I was thinking that Bernie Sanders might be able to. I thought if Bernie could kill JFK successfully, that he could run, he could become president.
Nah, but, you know. So how am I gonna say this? Bernie Sanders has some identities that America. Ain't ready for. So, you know, I'm pretty sure he's Jewish. I don't think America's ready. I don't know Americans are. Yeah, I'm not sure. And I don't have a problem with that, right? You know, I voted for Bernie Sanders, but I feel like there's a segment of folks who look at that and, like, being Christian is important. So important that Donald Trump is a fake Christian right now. And has that white lady talking about and strike and strike and strike and strike and strike talking, calling on African angels and shit. So yeah, like you know, religiosity is very important in this country. Separation of church and state, right? But we've got in God we trust on the money. I don't know.
That's probably why one of the big things was when Obama was running, they were calling him like the Muslim socialist.
Man, I mean, at the same rate, they talked about his what's his pastor was it Jeremiah, right? Jeremiah Wright, who's clearly Christian.
Yeah.
Right? But they...
Nobody more Christian than black people. Than a Chicago black church. What's more Christian than that shit?
Like, no, this is like a radical, you know, whatever. I don't know. Forget. But, you know, he was pretty strong in what he said about white folks. And it's like, well, I mean, he... I'm assuming he's probably, what, born in the 50s, maybe the 40s. He grew up in Chicago, around white folks. I can only imagine.
It's like, maybe since they watch Lovecraft now, maybe they
get an idea of why
Jeremiah Wright feels the way he does.
You may understand why Jeremiah Wright be like, yeah, white folks. I ain't messing with y'all.
You know, I can't really remember exactly what he said. I'm going to have to, like, go on YouTube and pick through it. I might put it in the footnotes of this episode. I kind of like doing that, putting the sources in there. Because the only thing I can think about is on the Boondocks when they were doing the Black President episode. He was like, fuck America. America can eat a dick. America can eat the balls.
Man, Boondocks. I mean, that's why I need, you were talking about HBO Max a little earlier before we hopped on here. I need to get on HBO Max. Watch the Boondocks again.
It's so worth it. Samurai Jack is on that bitch. The end of it, like, it's such a good streaming service because it has so much, and it has the TFS, the Turner Classic.
I know you're talking about TC's, the classic TCS, movie. Yeah.
Turner. Yeah, they got a lot. I'm just now, like, actually getting into movies now as, like, a thing because I have trouble sitting still. So, so it's been pretty decent, like, so far. But when to take it back to the chat that you were we talked about a little bit earlier. How's that been running? Is it, you know, is it have the same energy? I know it probably might not have the same energy as it has before, but you know, how's it been? Like, how's the reception been?
Yeah,
from
the men. I would say so. I mean, the energy obviously when it first started was like that energy with most things is. Like, it's always the highest when it begins, but it's still been an ongoing source for, you know, men to engage in that questions. Things are happening in media. We want to discuss different resources get posted. So it's been a good space for men to hold each other accountable and learn from each other. That's the main thing I wanted it to be. Because I didn't come into it with, like, these grand plans, like, okay, like, we're going to change men and we're going to, like, have these dynamic, you know, kind of conversations that really change people's lives. I was like, well, we need a space where we can first talk and hold each other accountable at minimum. And then whatever grows from there organically grows from it. There's probably roughly, I haven't checked the numbers in a minute, but there's probably roughly 100 men in it, I would say. Black men, specifically. So, man, because I think overall it's important that black men talk about these things more in general. Because when I was in college, I was in a group called HEADS. It's Here Earning a Destiny Through Honesty, Eagerness, and Determination of Self. So it's kind of like a double acronym, whatever. But it was a black male organization. It was very important because it was every Monday night, a space on a predominantly white campus where I could get with like-minded brothers or different-minded brothers and talk and challenge each other and have a conversation and laugh. And I think at the end of the day, like, it's a space where men were able to do learning because they maybe entered that space thinking one way and left it. Like, I see things a little differently, or I understand why these conversations are important. And, you know, I think that can be harder when you graduate college and whether you went to a PWI or HBCU, it can be harder to engage in these conversations in general around misogyny and women or around what we face as black people in this country or being politically engaged or whatever, you know. In college, I feel like it's easier, and I see it because I'm on a college campus. I still work on the college campus. So for college students, there's so many opportunities. And I feel like that keeps me engaged because I'm on a college campus. But if you're not, like, it's easy just to clock in, clock out, capitalist machine, chew you up, spit you out. I'm just here to get my check, go home. So.
And that makes sense. It's very important that you had that space. Like, and then that you cultivated a space, even, you know, if your intention wasn't to have the same impact or effect, like, it was just to be
exactly, yeah, right.
You know, I have something,
right? And I think one thing with the two is like we call on women, Black women, to do a lot of work already. And earlier it was like, should we invite women to this space? And I'm like, I mean, we got to be able to talk about this amongst ourselves and hold each other accountable. Black women keep doing that. Like, if you want to talk to a Black woman about it, you know, talk to her. If you trust her, if she trusts you, have that conversation. But we don't need to continually keep leaning on them to continue teaching us, because I think there's a lot of books that's already been written. And let's read some shit, and then we can go and maybe ask some questions once you actually engage. Because I think it's another thing. Niggas don't read. They say feminism is created on Twitter, which is like the most idiotic thing you could say, in my opinion, because like that, yeah, I mean, you just literally don't read, but that's a whole other, well, I guess not a whole other piece, but yeah, I think that's one thing with that group too, is like, all right, like, let's educate ourselves. There's a lot of things that have been said on Twitter around people's personal experiences, and you don't know how to understand it or unpack it or think about it, or these people are close to you, or there's men close to you who have done these things. Like, what do you do? The least you can do is educate yourself if you're not the person who's been perpetuating it. Because in some way, you probably have a lot to go around you by not noticing or not checking in or not cultivating a safe space or whatever that is. Like, I feel like we all are culpable in, like, rape culture, sexual assault culture, all of that. Like, we all have something to learn and grow in when it comes to that, even if we're not like, oh, I didn't do any of that behavior, you know, because some of the niggas on that was devious, right? A lot of that shit, you know, I mean, all of it, you know, you can say it's devious, right? And there's some niggas on that was on that 12 times, which is like some other shit. So. Right.
You on some, like, serial shit, bro. Like, you what's know, wrong with you?
Like, it ain't, none of it's okay. And you out here doing it 12 times, bro. You out. You out of here.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, because everybody treats, you know, it's like going to, it's like you locked up. Like, they treat the one guy who got one body different
exactly,
than the guy who killed 12
people. He got one, but that nigga.
You know, like, the crime itself is still fucked. Yeah, good. Like, he different. Like, it's like how niggas treat the Joker. Like, it's like, I'm like, yeah, we all criminals, but, like, we not the Joker. Like,
and I think it's easy for men to like, oh, I'm not that. I ain't out here. Well, I haven't done that to anybody. And it's like, okay, yeah, you haven't, right? But you may have said something, you've done things, you make jokes, you let jokes go by. I mean, I think there's little things that, you know, we all perpetuate within it. But I think especially as Black men, we need to be mindful of, you know, how we engage in the conversations we do.
Because silence exactly. is a form of compliance.
So just because you're not saying anything.
And because we benefit from it. We've been, like you said, he's not saying, we benefit from the experience. We benefit from rape culture. We benefit from misogyny. Like, we directly, you know, gain something if we either believe it
exactly.
or not. Like, but there's something that right. we have that women don't possess that we need
if to there's no counter narrative going against a dominant narrative. Like, that dominant narrative, even if nothing's being said, as we're saying, is continually perpetuated. So at minimum, we got to put out a counter narrative, whether that's you educating yourself and moving differently for your own self, talking to other brothers, having conversations, you know. I think it doesn't, I think sometimes too, we think of, and we think about this from a bigger standpoint, of everything happening in our country. We're talking about the election and you know, the GroupMe I made, or we think about the Black Lives Matter protests with George Floyd's killing, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. A lot of us think of these grand actions that we have to do. And I can see, you know, the protest, that's more of a grand action, right? But we can do these smaller things. Like I see mutual aid groups on Facebook where I've seen a lot during the pandemic where if people have a question or need something or can't afford something or just, you know, I need help, they post in this Facebook group and all these people post resources and, hey, what's your Cash App? What's your Venmo? You know, what, you know, and those are, that's like something really simple where you create a group of people that will help each other. And it's some of that community minded behavior that we used to have a lot of in our communities. And I think we haven't because America makes us very individualized. We're not individualized people. We need to be collectivist people, I believe. And, you know, I think we think of these grand, like, okay, I need to, I think like defund the police, abolish the police. Like, yes, sure, right, of course, yes, abolish the police. They also have been police since they were overseers and slave traders and all of that. So like, it's gonna take a little while. So we gonna need to make sure we taking care of our communities and having this collectivist mentality. And, you know, I'm talking about Black people, but poor people as well. Cause I think that's one thing that as far as coalition building that we need to do across communities, not just communities of color, just communities. But yeah, that's just why when I think about like, what do we do as change? What can we do? Like, it can just get in a group of people and like talking about something and building action out of that. You don't have to like solve it all immediately.
Because fostering communities, exactly, make minor actions, like, and those small, you know, it's the small things that really matter and keep a movement kind of like functioning and going. Because, like you said, marches are cool. They're more of like national or statewide, like call to actions, right, for people who come across it. It's not for the people actually in the march because they know exactly what they're marching for. Like, it's a literal, like, it's a strategy to build for propaganda and for groupment. So it's, that's, like I said, it's just so much to undertake. That's why you talked about building coalition and how important that is. It's interesting you mentioned that because I was actually, for some, I knew I was unemployed because I was arguing with people on Facebook. and I was arguing with a friend of mine and we were talking, you know, a chef friend of mine actually, and he was talking about like, you know, he only votes with like, you know, with only with Black people in mind. ABC 1, 2, 3. He's like, I'm a Black. I was like, but you know, there's, yeah, cause I was like, you know, your vote, it affects other people. Like what you choose. I was like, it might not directly affect you. I'm like, but it will affect the money that goes into the services that care for the people who might not have the same access, right, to things as you. Like, I was like, right, Blackness, right, is intersectional. And he was like, you know, what is the LGBT community doing for Black people? What is, I'm like, you know, it's okay, Black people.
Yeah, you know, like, Bayard, like, and I was just like, Bayard Rustin, you know, that's one person, you know, March on Washington.
Always, that's who I was like, bro, Dr. King's, like, his big homie, his Qui-Gon Jinn, like, was a gay man, yeah. So it was so frustrating to talk about building coalitions because it's like, well, we're not gaining anything like directly, like this isn't in our self-interest at the moment. I'm like, mm-hmm, who said it isn't? Yeah. Like, I was like, there's so many things that like each vote benefits or, you know, is that to the detriment of Black people at each tick. Like, no matter which vote you get, it's going to be one that's going to be the best for some black people, and then it's going to be even more difficult for some black people. It's just going to be difficult being fucking like, black.
You undermine yourself.
If you're like, black people, if you're
like looking down on, like you're a straight black person, you're looking down on gay people, you're a black man, you thinking black women are these objects that you're supposed to do things to, or you know, whatever that power dynamic you may have, black and, you know, you probably hold some, and you have a power, position of power in our community, cisgender, et cetera. You probably want to think about how undermining or disenfranchising folks in our community actually undermines all of us. Like, I don't think people understand that, because, like, you're doing this to a black person. So, like, you talking about you do it for black, but you're literally acting against black. Doesn't make sense.
And that's such a difficult thing to base. I can't, it's hard to say this all sound like a fucking time. Like, it's so difficult to base all of your decisions upon, like, right or wrong. On
right, it's not, yeah, it's an impossible thing to do as well. That's true.
Yeah, like, because it's so many, it's literally impossible. Like, you're trying to base your decision upon people. You got people who don't agree with you, people who completely, like, it's so hard, like, because you have an idea of what blackness looks like, so, and you're choosing to take this path or to support this
is how
idea
I
of blackness.
Figure out that for me personally. If, of course, I want, in a perfect world, yeah, white people need to be on board. That shit don't really matter though, because we gonna do what we need to do. Not for real.
Yeah, not for
exactly.
real.
Exactly. So, like, that's
been doing
not
this shit
like
for too long,
the goal.
Like, without them.
I think sometimes that's also, like, sometimes black people look at white people being on board as a goal, which is, like, not a goal. That is not a goal. But I will say, as far as blackness, when I see the idea of, like, white gays, and I see, like, G-A-Z-E-E, impacting like why I'm doing something. That's when I'm like, I need to make a black ass decision, because like, why am I thinking about why? Why am I thinking about what white people think of the situation? Is that stopping me? If what white people are thinking is stopping me from doing something, and not like my own personal beliefs or. You know, because you know, we all have our own personal values and things we value, you know, which is important. But if I'm like, what do white people think about this? And you may not literally ask yourself that question, but you know, it creeps in. You know, I think a lot of things I think about randomly, like during the pandemic. You know, people have been getting money in a lot of different ways, and we won't talk about that right now, but. You know, I saw some videos from black people flying in Somerset, and people were like, oh, that's why we don't need to be at Somerset. Like, black people always messing up something. And I'm like, you really care about white people think right now? Because they're not about to say black people can't come in Somerset. They're not about to make a rule that says that. And they're going to look at us differently whether we fight or don't fight. So it don't matter what we do. So, like, forget about what white people are thinking. It don't matter. Like, they think what they think. And who, it doesn't matter what how you behave. You know? Exactly. And we want, exactly.
Whiteness so close to access.
It's like, oh, it's close. It's like, you know, white
is our closest way to
flight.
Access.
It was black flight after that, because black people was like, oh, man, the white people left. I need to go where the white people went, because it's better there. Mm-hmm. And there's things that, you know, that went into why Detroit looks like it looks like. It's not just like black people leaving. That's very, like, a very surface level. It ain't just black people leaving. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, a result of, like proximity to whiteness is, you know, black people like that, we also move. You know? A lot of other stuff that goes in that, of course. You know, I'm not a Detroit historian, but Yeah, I think like when I think about making black decisions, it's like if I'm like worrying about white people and my decisions, I'm making some mistakes, you know.
Big time. Like once you start thinking to yourself, like once this gets a little less spicy in your thoughts, like a little less seasoning in your your ideas, like you go, maybe. Like, maybe I'm doing a Caucasian. Like, maybe Tyrone Copple. Like, maybe you dial that shit the fuck back. You feel me? Listen, I had to, when you talked about assigning your own personal value to how you make that decision in terms of like informing your blackness and like expressing it, the way I had to learn to do it because. I was trying to make your you know how black people have this idea that
we need to be one band, one sound, one black
to get anything done. Yeah, like, but not everybody read music, Dr. Lee. Like at all. So my main thing is like, if you know, I'm like, okay, my main thing is okay, not everybody's gonna agree, not everybody's gonna rock with me. My main thing is that nobody take away your choice or your life because you're black. My main concern is that your choice or your life is not taken away because you're black. And I just, you know, and I feel like that's a good way for me to maneuver because I can still base my personal values on what keeps black people safest and like what's best for like our agency. Like, because if you don't like, because blackness is so, it's so vast. Right. Like it's something we've claimed, like because something was stripped away from us. So us like, you know, assigning to that what it is, it's so vague and vast because the concept of blackness is not even older than our time here in America. Like we had to say that was who we are. Like, and then some of us still don't want to be called that. We still have different ways we want to like claim ourselves. Like, oh, I'm brown. I'm this, you know. So, but you figure that shit the fuck out. Like, and that shit is important to inform your blackness. Mm-hmm. Like, what values like protect your blackness? Like, and what holds it, like, and what keeps it from being harmed, because it's in constant danger. And everybody acts like it's not in constant danger. They're so confused on why black people have to preserve that we are such, like, because we understand that our identity is like,
and this made me think. I listen to a lot of podcasts in general, and I was listening to Jalen Rose has a new podcast called, like, The Renaissance Man or something. He had Big Sean on there. So two Detroit big homies, you know, big up to the city. Mm. And Big Sean was talking about Detroit in that way, but I think Detroit is very black, and I think it kind of is equivalent. He was talking about in his music, he put a lot of Detroit influences because, like, he doesn't care that other people won't understand it or don't get it, but he know the people in the city is going to connect with it and respect it, and that's all that matters. So it's, like, kind of what, like, that made me, like, as far as like blackness and pieces like that, like you, we talk about one band, one sound, drumline, like Dr. Lee, Nick Cannon, what was his name? Darius, whatever his name was in the movie. I don't remember. Right. Like, you know, he still went and learned the music, right? So he still, I think also as black people, like, you know, giving people the opportunity to learn and grow. And so I'm thinking about like the group that I created, the group me. And you know, having a space for black men to come and ask questions. Because, you know, you may harm people. I think that's another thing with that group. You may harm people just ask stupid questions on Twitter. So ask those stupid questions in here, maybe, you know. And we may not think they're stupid, but there's going to be some people who don't think they're stupid. But we so, like, I just say all that to say kind of what you're saying as far as blackness and just cultivating space for black people to grow and learn. Thinking about those mutual aid groups, I talked about cultivating space for black people to ask questions and get support. I think as much as we can, like, be communal, because that's one thing I've seen through this pandemic. Like, the only thing that's going to save us is our own selves, and you can't do it by yourself, so you need a community to do it.
Absolutely, because I've been learning over time. I want to say I've learned, like, over COVID, but I definitely say, like, once I came back home, I realized more than ever how important, like, community is. and your success, and not just success as like and how we interpret it in a capitalist sense.
Right. Yeah. Just your well being
overall, and how you feel as a person, and how you your overall well being, and you know your your actualization, the actualization of self.
Right.
Like, that's how I would like is like viewing it. It's being so close to people, because I've been reading this book. Well, not reading it, I was listening to it actually. It's called Tribe by Sebastian Younger. And he's a conflict journalist, well, just a journalist in general, but most of his work is based in, you know, war zones and things like that. And he was talking about how in different communities, how close people came, how some people became so close because of tragedy. Others were, and it's close. So I'll break it down and be more specific. So he talked about how in the bombings during World War II of London, how the people were, they assumed that the people would be panicking and that the psych wards would be filled with people losing their minds because of the bombings and all of the trauma and suffering and the lack of supplies that may be going on. But they realized that people were healthier than ever because they were closer to each other and they were forced to be that way. People were healthier, children were behaving better socially. The way the people interacted and the things that they created was much more creative than when people were just kind of being on their own beforehand. Because remember, London is a big ass city, but people are packed in. So, and then they had another example of white settlers who would go and they would either be, sometimes they would just stay with the natives in certain cases, with the native people and the indigenous people here. And they would just be part of it and not want to like come back because they felt so much more purposeful and actualized in the community itself. Like they felt like they were part of something larger and interconnected, and they were engaged actively into that communities. Like, so these people would, then they would get taken back sometimes by these white settlers to, you know, where they came from, try to get taken back to their family. And these men would literally run away and like come right to go back to the tribes they were staying with, because it was just so bad. Cause they was like, I don't feel like I matter here. Like I don't, you know, like I don't feel importance. I don't feel connected. Mm-hmm. Like I feel separated because this is about my personal achievement. And it doesn't, you know, make me feel like I'm a part of something. And that's something that's so deep for Black people, which is something that we've lost over, not something we've lost over generations, I can't say, but something that's, it's changed, and we haven't made enough of an emphasis, in my opinion, on kind of stopping that change from happening as we become more digital over time. And what really made me see that was, it was Aretha Franklin's funeral, and also seeing how my family interacts now, to an extent, like how some of the younger people are like absent and people can't, you know, I can't reach out, you know, you can't reach out to such and such about this, even though they can do this or are connected with this or have access to it. You know, it's like, yeah, they, that's just them. Like, that's just what they do. They just happen to be your cousin. They just happen to be this. And that's because we depended on each other to survive, like, so much. And we feel like we don't depend on each other to survive anymore, because we're so insulated by, like, we have Amazon Prime. We have
Amazon is everything.
Amazon Prime. Like, we have social media. Everything. Like, Amazon gonna have a strip club, and it's gonna be one of the greatest strip clubs of all time. I can't Benzo, like they gonna like
Benzo booties,
like put strippers in like the little tools and just and they just gonna come out. Benzo, yes.
Oh man.
Yes.
But the thing,
I'm ready. Yeah. I'm ready.
So one thing that's
but they talk like, about I how think, separate we are.
Cause so that's one thing about me. I think about things in like these bigger systems. Cause that's all, like, as a social worker, like I think, you know, I was trained to think of things in a larger way because I want a macro threat. So what you're saying for me falls within capitalism and white supremacy, which can be one and the same depending on, you know, but not really. Exactly. But, you know, like we're talking about poor communities, but, you know, capitalism turns us into consumers. demographics, what is that based in, that consumer, that demographic? That those identifications, all of that stems from white supremacy. Who has power in this country? Black people, white people, okay. How much they make? The white people make more, the black people make less. These people are more liable to be able to do X. Let's put these here, let's do this here. Nah, they don't need that. Let's cultivate these communities. Let's give these communities this that's left over. Of course, I'm very simplifying this. It's very much more deeper than what I'm saying, but like there's like these big things at play that are rather simple, and they get really complex, right? But that's because like at the root they're simple. So I think for us, we need to start simply. Kind of like what we've been saying already, like, but yeah, I just really connected with what you were talking about, just like that, you know, how important the community is for us, and it made me think about how like white supremacy and capitalism really just strips us of that community, because it makes you a cog.
Yeah, it makes you a cog, and I realized how much of a cog I was. Cause I have a house now, and you know, I know both of my neighbors to both sides of me. But like when I was just realizing how long in my life I was just like going, you know, go home, go to school, or like, you know, go to work, go to school, you know, don't say, you know, I mean, I just knew exactly. My neighbors on each block, but it was like, I wasn't interacting. Like I wasn't cultivating a community when community was there. And like now I can, and COVID has made it like extremely difficult, but also everyone just seems like so terrified of everyone. Like, holy shit. Like, I like, oh my God. Like I walked up cause I was trying to find out who was the car guy in my neighborhood. And cause like on my mama block, you know, it was a guy named James and he fixed cars. Shout out to James. And, I was like, you know, I was having an issue with my car. So I was like, okay, maybe, you know, I just put some money into the hood. Like, what's going on with it? And so I had to knock on my neighbor next door. I'm going to hear an older guy. Right. He's one of the real great examples of how people talk about older black men not showing emotion. I can say that's a lie because I know great emotional black men. Like, he's an amazing person, transparent person. But he told me, he was like, yeah, your neighbor next door, two doors down from us, they, you know, fix cars. So, but, you know, I think he may have got the house wrong. So, I ride my bike up the street. I jog around the block or whatever. So, I walk up to the door, and I see somebody look at me through the blinds as I'm approaching the house. And then I hear somebody on the phone talking loud as hell. And I ring the doorbell, and I'm just like, ding, dong. And then I can hear somebody literally talking on the phone, but I can feel them leaning on the door. Like, it's like shook of me, like absolutely.
Right. I'm not up to no good.
I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm your neighbor. I was trying to, you know, see if you can help me out. But they didn't say anything, like, was terrified. Yeah. And like, even when I have other neighbors, I would walk up and they were hanging out or whatever. I'm like, what up, dog? You know, I'm mad. I live over here. Whoop de whoop. Like, people sometimes won't say their names, or like, you know, even if they got, you know,
stand off about whatever. Shit, yeah.
Like, people don't, you know, they looking kind of like crazy and like, nobody just walks up to them and
right,
say,
our circumstances,
know,
made
like,
it
hey,
where
like,
we
what's
have
up?
To like, protect, you know, our, like, protect ourselves from our own people, right? And I'm not, and this is not like a pointing at black people thing. Like, that's not my point. Like, black people need to do better. Exactly. It's like we're in these systems that have exactly
we just
right.
happen to be black.
We're in these systems that kind
like
of
just, so we talking about black this, shit.
You know, functioning in this way, and it's not nobody's fault. It ain't our fault. I ain't gonna say it ain't nobody fault. It ain't our fault. But I think right, exactly.
No, not at all.
And I think it's up to those of us that may notice it to like work to push against it. You know, and I think one thing. You know, the election, I think to an extent, it definitely can be a false sense of security. I'll say that. And I will say it does show the power of mobilizing folks. You know, this was specific around voting, which I think is maybe one of the easier things to mobilize people around. So I think that's something people chew on. Like, yeah, voting probably is the easiest thing to mobilize people around. What else? What about against capitalism? That's probably a little harder. I just think...
right. Exactly.
You want to give up the concept of the dollar? Everything that you waste your value and worth upon?
Like, I don't know what you... I need to buy her a Birkin.
My nigga,
I
need this paper, nigga. She said she want a rich nigga.
But, yeah, I mean, I think...
You feel me?
But
so rush a Birkin.
But I will. But say it to say, like, there's power in mobilization. I think that's what the election show. You know, I think some other things are harder to mobilize around, though. But there is power in it, and we need to keep doing it. Right.
Yeah, we need to find what's like our mutual. What's of our mutual benefit? And I think right now, it's fucking food and climate change for the most part, like, especially because we have a great migration that just occurred.
Yeah,
and very few people are talking about, like, all these people leaving fucking the West Coast, like leaving California, this large mass
literally
migration,
right? Yeah, that's who
have just packed up because people have lost their homes or lost areas. Like, there's so much is like changed for us, and we live in an interesting like kettle of beans of time. So like, let's think about some of the, if I trace back to maybe what's the average American,
right? I think like
it used to be what,
mid 70s, probably something around
70,
there.
I think.
Right,
mid 70s, around that, around that range. If you, you know, if you're lucky enough to have like pension and stuff, so if we take that math and we do that 70 minus 20, and that's, you know, 50. So if they start in the 1950s. You dealing with a group of people, because you have to deal with all ages of people. So you put a group of people who were born in the 50s, and by the time they were really able to like think and be purely cognizant,
right?
Like,
exactly,
they were looking at the civil rights movement like unfold, like, so they had like a wild different view of the world, and they've been, and they reaped the benefits and some of the problems from that civil rights, like Black Power era. And so you have the civil rights movement, you have Vietnam, you have all these things in between that like foster this idea of like this distrust and polarization between people in America. And then like you see it, like you see conflict, like we've literally seen conflict this whole entire time, like television. It's like you've been seeing things like unfold and explode all around you. So you're on edge, waiting for something to like blow up at like every like turn that you go to. So especially for Black people, so I can understand like how we could be like terrified of like dealing with each other or like not trusting your neighbors, because a lot of niggas was in the projects and shit and had, this was like living too close to each other, which is a health hazard in a lot of different like ways.
Poor plumbing
and faulty wiring and poor, you know, and like, you know, just having poor infrastructure, poor plumbing. You know, you feel me? So you have neighbor trauma, like, and so you see everybody as like your enemy, and then on top of that, like the people in your community is like hoisted on the news as like dangerous. Like you have the war on drugs that hits like right after We Shall Overcome. You saying, you know, this is your brain on drugs, like all these, you know, super predators. So you've been built upon living in fear and terror. Like we have a war on drugs. We have a war on terror. Like we have a war on so much shit to be fucking scared about. Like you don't feel like you're at peace, even though you're talking about polarization in the world.
One thing I want to also add is thinking about like with Donald Trump, people think polarization started with him. Like we talked about, catastrophe breed circumstance. Like there's been a lot of catastrophes for a lot of years that got us to 2016 and where we are now, 2020. It wasn't just Obama. You know, Joe Biden, he was part of that crime bill. I'm not about to talk about getting to that right now. It is what it is. But back then, many people in our community thought that was a great idea, right? Maybe the wool was pulled over their eyes and it wasn't really clear on what the far-reaching outcomes would be, but they all thought we got to do something about this, right? But yeah, that polarization has been happening for a while.
Right.
Yeah, that polarization happened for a while.
So you've been sitting there like, it's been digging in this, right? Like, so we're just, it's really, you know, I think what really would help kind of cure that polarization is an admission. Like, if America could, like, there's no admission of guilt, there's no, like, really great form of accountability being done at all. Like, so you have all these things done to you. We've experienced all these things, but you never get an apology or, you know, you have to come up with an explanation. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you just have to like adapt to it. Like, America does not stand. It's like, we were wrong. You know, accountability, this is the steps that we'll take to heal this X, Y, and Z. Like, we need to be held accountable so we can restore the country that we live in, but America doesn't see that as valuable because they don't see that as strength. Like, you know, and it's hard because you either make your, either as a country decide to do that because you as a country decide that that's what you value and you value your people and you value their lives and their livelihood, or you're forced to do it like how in a lot of cases the Germans are forced to do it in treaties and things like that. And so it's like, what are you willing to do until something is done to you? And then when, you know, when these treaties happen, you feel salty about it. And then everything shifts and changes because now everybody feels shafted. Like, everybody feels shafted because they've been suffering this entire time. And now this whole entire country gets shitted on, or it goes to absolute shit.
Just in this boy.
And what do you do next? You're just here. Like, you're just hearing, so you have to form a new America. You have to form, like, Donald Trump's America that they want. They wanted the fascist America, like, fascism American, like, this fascism American fried chicken. So, like, no, nah, I don't think Donald eats fried chicken.
I just I've seen him with a KFC bucket.
Sticks with ketchup.
He probably just get all white meat or some shit. Yeah. He eat all kind of fast food. That nigga's gross.
You seen him in a KFC bucket?
He just... Bro,
yeah, didn't he buy like the
no? Nah, well, he definitely bought it for the
college. They won the Super Bowl, wasn't it?
I think it was Clemson. Maybe it was Clemson, Alabama, because them the ones always won the championship. Clemson, Alabama.
Isn't that where they get the guy video?
I'm not. That was you Clemson. Know. Let's see here, no there. I'm hating. Dog.
I was about to say, and they be catching their kids early.
Dog.
Sweep it. Did you hear the, oh my God, did you get that? I got to send you this podcast about Aaron Hernandez.
Oh, word.
It's a dog ass podcast, like with like his brother and all the rest of them in that bitch. It's like a, like in like one of the guy who was like his best friend talking about
I did see the that kind of alluded
then,
to that.
You know, they then people assume.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah, he talks about it, and it's a pretty decent amount of work, man.
Gotcha.
So I have to say, I think it's American Gladiators. Yeah. I think that's actually called American Gladiators. But it's been, man, we've really been trying to just unpack all this shit, like, why come niggas not close? How, you know, like, how do we hold black men accountable? And something that's been interesting, like, how do you feel when you see, when you go on, like, social media and then you see, like, black men, weakest links, like, you know, some of the things, like, that are said about black men because, like, maybe a rapper said something or, like, somebody like dumb on Twitter says something like, does that make you go like I understand why you say that, like because like I'll be having my moment when I'll be like I feel it. I just sit my ass down.
Like, that's a good question.
I'll be feeling attacked when I'm maybe you should feel attacked.
it is what it is. If people feel that way, if that's their experience, I can't invalidate that. I think about again what I said before. It's like, all right, so what work are we doing? Why are we providing maybe proof that we aren't weakest links? Maybe move in a way that you're not. If you are not moving in that way, keep moving in that way. Don't let somebody say black men are the weakest link. Cause I think that's one thing that black men do is that they, when they see black men as the weakest link, they perpetuate things about black women. And I'm like, that's not helpful. Black women, y'all don't do this, don't do that, or this is what y'all do and don't do. It's kind of like my thoughts are always like, make your own tweet. Don't just like, well, you said this, so I'm going to say this. It's like, you know, that's what they said, and let it be what it is. So, I think it's kind of like, you know, take that shit on the chin. You know, it is what it is. That's what was said. Understand where it's coming from. Of course, I think there are some lines that are crossed that are like, okay, this is when I bring up the white gaze again. So, like, you seem to think white men are any different? That's interesting. I don't like that shit because it's like, I don't like the race comparison shit because I'm like, okay, like, you talk about me as a black man, but if you're trying to say black men compared to these other men are like inferior, that sounds like racism. Not talking about sexism. So that's when I have problems. But outside of that, I mean, it's like, I can't, it's like, when I think about it, it's like, you know, we say white people be doing all this shit. It might be a great white man who don't do none of that shit, but he better take that shit on the chin. All right. Now, like, let me do that. I need to take it on the chin.
Look at my Caucasian like, friend. Isn't he grand?
I need to be a better man. I think when I was younger, it's definitely like, well, you know, I'm a black man and I go through all this. And they like, yeah, I know, I'm black too. Like, oh, yeah, you're right. You are black. Damn, you're right. Yeah, I know, I'm black. Right. Because that's another thing. Black man, I go through all this stuff as a black man. I'm going to be like, yep, me too. And I'm a woman. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, it's honestly like, you know, you got to just have this. And I think sometimes men look at that thing, or like, yeah, that's the word, weak. Like, that's some weak-ass shit. And it's like, maybe so. Maybe niggas need to be weak sometimes, be a little vulnerable. You be a little tender sometimes, nigga. Maybe so. Oh, it's so tough. Nah, tough as fuck.
I'm telling you, because niggas be out here like overcooked combos. Niggas be trying to be tough all the time, nigga. Like, relax, my nigga. Like, what you talking about? He was like, 50 Cent got all these niggas wanting to be hard. I'm from Detroit. For real. Oh, I'm 100% a civilian, and I always let it be known, no matter where I go. I'm like a civilian here, tax paying, voting in his
side hustles that have LLCs.
I vote for judges.
You know.
Yes.
Exactly.
Like, I have renter's insurance. Like, please.
I got a 401k.
Slow down. Like, and it doesn't really help anybody.
I got a 401k.
You feel me? I'm like, I literally go to I go to an acupuncturist. Like, I'm not, I've never seen needles pierce stone. I'm not that hard. Like, ever. And I'm so glad, like, yeah, I'm so glad this generation of, like, young black men don't have to be.
And you know, like, and you know what I'm thinking about? Like, you be talking about... Yeah,
you really do, and it's exhausting.
I feel like that's Tupac. Because he felt like he had to be hard. Because he was, like, a very...
Not in a shame,
he's a soft-ass nigga. Like, he... Which is okay. Like, I don't mean that in a direct. I think when you say a nigga soft, it's derogatory, but it's like he can act like poetry.
That's what everybody loved
like,
about him.
Softer things, you know, which is fine for a man to engage in that. But he's like, nah, nigga, I'm fucking thug.
Yeah.
I slap a nigga. And I'm like, you what? I get how you grew up. Can I know a little bit about Tupac, right? But I'm like, you kind of went overboard sometimes. Dog.
He for sure went overboard. Yo, if you listen to Against All Odds, I'm like, oh, the choppers had to blow. He was saying, like, niggas names and what they was involved in and who they connected to. I'm like, hold on, big fella.
Dog.
You got a bit. He really pulled a gear. It's really that low key was just Get Rich or Die Trying happening in real time. Except you know, but like I'm just like dog. Like that's literally the craziest shit because this is really gonna kill you. Like it will really fucking kill you. Just
exactly.
Trying to be
and I feel like black
so
men get into that competition
and all this shit because it's somebody crazier.
You know? And it's not just
you.
And
if not,
it's not,
just
it's
like
not just killing. It's not just murder. But I just think you know.
Don't push the line.
Many different ways. You know,
yeah, it's competition. Like I have to be like no, this person went there. Well, I gotta take it there. Like, oh, I got it. You know, I gotta take it there. I'm not looking like this or like that. Like for a while, like I caught myself like being somebody who was I'm not gonna say I'm all out of vengeance. Well, I'm akin to an Old Testament God, but I would definitely say that over time I've had to like learn how to be like just to let. I was like, okay, at some point this wrath is something more than just wrath. Like it's something underneath this wrath. Like you have to be like hurt or something. Like you know, like you have to feel like violated to a sense. Like it's because if you don't dig through those emotions, you won't ever like gain like a larger experience from what you're going through at that exact moment. Like you rob yourself of an emotional, like a true emotional experience from digging from that. Like you talk about roots from digging from that branch emotion to going to the source of it. Like, why do you feel that way now? Like what action brought you up to that? To that point, like that's why it's so important for those spaces you talked about in building coalition, especially with black men, to like work through, you know, levels of emotional intelligence and levels of just doing that. Because I've been doing that now. Like I have to go through like I go to like therapy and I have to use like worksheets and shit like that, or I have to be like mindful of like certain things just so I can dig through it and really like. Yeah. Feel like I'm not robbing myself of a larger experience in life because statistically I'm not living longer than like if I get married, like I'm not living longer than
it's all downhill
so I better have like a good like life.
I bet,
man. Same. Listen, it went all down. It went all the way downhill from 18. Like I sat there. I knew it was bad. I was at Fishbones for my 18th birthday. And the lady walked up to me and she was like,
my fucking birthday.
We need some more shrimp.
It's all downhill, really.
Like, and I was like, miss.
Like, do I got it wrong?
And I knew it was downhill from
the
there.
Black.
Like,
damn.
All down.
That's exactly what happened. I had all black and a white tie, so I caught that shit upon myself. And I was like, sure dog. Turn. I was like, yeah, capitalism hooks in you. I said, it's over with, bro. Like, oh my God. Oh my. That's why I honestly, I never know what's like the uniform for the people who work at like Dollar General. So I never know who to ask for like help. Like, where to find shit?
Like,
and they're like me, like I've been sitting there, like yeah. I'm like, no, he don't work here. He just trying to find some Febreze.
Yeah, where? Shit, where?
When do you work
here? What a plastic service fork said, bro. Like,
you wearing a Bape hoodie? Like,
I got a Bape hoodie. That's weird. Oh man.
Like, what the fuck? Oh my God, oh, man.
Great conversation.
But I'm not gonna, I know we've been talking for a minute, so I'm not gonna keep you on for too long, man. Yeah, man. I'm so glad to finally get you on the podcast. It's been about time, man, and I really like interviewing people, so it's like cool, like interviewing people who like can dig through something. Like, once you talk about something, you can pick it apart, and then you can dig into this part and where the source lies in there. So it's always great.
Like,
so
you're crying. Like, all right, like, come on, man. Give me some.
Interrogation. Like, it always makes me feel like, I always feel like, yeah. Like, I always, right. Like, certain things, like, I feel like I'd be crying and shit. I'd be feeling like I'm on a hospital, like in a hospital.
Shine the light on the
interrogation thing. Was like, what can you give me? Like, keep the hostages safe, and I promise I'll get your answers. Exactly, right. Like, I'm the good cop.
Hey, Batman,
and
like,
Batman in the corner, he's the bad cop.
Man.
Yeah, Batman just sitting there beating the shit out of you. Batman curb stomp you like, where is he? He can't talk, Bruce. Like,
where is it? I see the dust.
Like, I smell the cookie. Where is it? Oh, like, that's criminal enough. That's
yeah, man.
Oh man, but tell people where they can find you, man. So, and like socials, you know, where you want me to find Twitter, you, side hustles that you want to plug.
FREEGREEZE. I'm not on Instagram for real, but you can go on there and look at my family, but I don't be on there. It's D Greasy, but I mean, I don't be on Instagram. That's just like a business website at this point. Yeah. Outside of that, man, you know, I grind it. You know, me and Jen got things cooking up, but, you know, we don't speak on those when they actually cooked up. So, you know, look forward to that. But some things we got cooking, but, you know, we'll
very
don't want to put the cart before the horse. So, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. For sure. That,
right? Country, nigga. I definitely understand. But thanks so much for coming on, man. It's been great. If you're listening, you know, relax. You know, just for a second, breathe, and think to yourself, like, you know, we have a new president. Well, we're about to have a new president. His eye imploded on television. And we moved on from a Cheeto. So maybe the next person we make president probably
maybe
should
not
be failing like mentally and physically. So
maybe
we can do like a presidential fitness program. So if any personal trainers out there or like anybody who wants to like make like the greatest president of all time, like, let's or maybe we can just abolish the whole office of presidency. I'm always down for getting rid of the office of president and replacing
a true republic,
a larger group of people that circle in and out. This went too far on tangent. Raytheon, I will not be working for you. Shout out to the city. And
hey y'all, it's Matt. If you'd like to engage with me and provide input, follow my personal Twitter @_itsmattman, or for the podcast
at @MatchMatt_ for Twitter and Instagram. Tell me what type of topics interest you all, and we can tailor certain episodes to meet those interests. Once again, on Twitter, @_ it's Matt Man. That's Matt with two T's. Or on Twitter or IG as @MatchMatt_. Also, do not forget to subscribe, follow, rate, and review the podcast. Your feedback is extremely important to my ability to enhance the quality of this show. And I like to give you the best that I can. So please, subscribe, follow, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.